It's May the 1st of 2000 in Judy Palkovich's house. Howard Braun and Minna Nielsen to interview on behalf of the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Program. Judy, say hello. Judy, let's take up where we left off the last time. What's the justification, the expectation, the ideology on which Hadassah can continue to exist in the major manner it has in the past, realizing that the old hook of Henrietta Szold and the Hadassah mission in Israel is not operative in the same manner? So what can we say for the future?
I assume you don't want me to say what I said. Do you want me to go back to what I said? Okay. I didn't mean to imply that when I said that a lot of organizations will go out of business, that Hadassah was one of them. Hadassah will remain, and it'll remain for a variety of reasons, one of which is because it's adapting very well to the new environment. But it will still remain because the things that it supports are still viable in people's minds. The hospital is still viable. Its attachment to Youth Aliyah is now children at risk as opposed to Youth Aliyah, of which there are many children at risk in Israel. So there's still it's still a viable project that has changed. It's no longer just a straight Youth Aliyah project. The community college now offers 4-year degrees in some fields, so you can get a university degree from the community college, which you couldn't do before, etc.
Where is that?
They're all in Jerusalem. The Career Guidance Center tests everybody who comes out of the Army in terms of when they leave the Army, in terms of what they want to do, and they've done that for years. They offer testing to all the Ethiopians. They offer testing to a wide variety of people to enable them to help people get on the right career path. But the larger adaptation of the organization is in several instances. The one I'm most familiar with is the fact that we now do a great deal more on this side of the ocean than we used to. Now, let me backtrack just a minute. People don't realize that Hadassah is everywhere. If you go to some place in North Dakota and there is a Jewish presence, it is Hadassah. If there are two Jewish presences, then there's a synagogue or a temple or a chavura. But if there's only one, it's Hadassah. And it is everywhere. And one of the strengths of Hadassah, and people never think about it who aren't intimately familiar with the organization, is it's probably one of the major vehicles for Jewish education in this country and has been for decades. Its greatest strength right now, I believe, and its strength for decades in the past, has been that it is run by women. It's not an auxiliary to anything. And therefore, it enabled women to play a role in decision-making and in administration and in fundraising that is unique. That doesn't mean there's no other organization that didn't allow women. National Council allowed women, etc. But nobody had the scope or the numbers. And that continues to this day. Now, there are a few things. Whoever invented life membership, I have often said, should be canonized, which is not a Jewish word, but it still holds true. In the 50s, the idea of life membership was created, which meant that you could you made a payment. At one point it was $50, then it was $100. It's now $250. $200, excuse me. And it makes you a life member. And what this means is you never pay dues again, but you are attached to the organization for the rest of your natural life. In Hadassah, it is very frequent that in the nursery, even with short maternity stays being what they are, mothers and or grandmothers and or great-grandmothers put life membership pins on little girls on their diapers, you know, which are Pampers these days. But and so for myself, I am a member of a four-generation life membership family. I have friends who have five, and I have two friends who have six.
Judy, is that meaningful?
Yes.
How can a child identify with a pin on a...
Well, they don't identify with a pin on the diaper. But the organization itself has created a whole way of sending things to the child life members. So they get puzzles at Purim, and they get different things throughout the year that come from Hadassah. They don't become an active member of the organization until they're an adult, until they turn 18, when they become an actual member in terms of the fact that they get mailings from some Hadassah group somewhere. Young Judea is another whole thing that we can talk about, but just let's go back to the viability as an organization. I was made a life member by my mother-in-law after I worked in the Blintz Project, and she saw I was really interested in the organization. She made a payment, made me a life member. When I was the membership vice president of this of the Pittsburgh chapter, I made my grandmother a life member. My grandmother was 86 at the time, 84 at the time. You know, what do you give an 84-year-old woman for her birthday who doesn't have all that much but doesn't need anything more than what she's already got? She absolutely adored it. My mother had become a life member previous to that. When our daughter turned 13, one of her bat mitzvah presents was a life membership in Hadassah. She did not get it in the nursery. I wasn't even a member of Hadassah at the time. But we made her a life member when she became a bat mitzvah. And so we are a four-generation family. The fact that my grandmother is no longer alive doesn't mean anything. We're still a four-generation family. And if my daughter marries and has a daughter, we will be a five-generation family. The other part of this for men is to be an associate. It's a one-time payment also. Men cannot be members of Hadassah, but they are associates. And my father-in-law was one of the first two associates in Pittsburgh. My husband became an associate about a year after I became a life member. His mother made him an associate, and our son became an associate as one of the gifts we gave him when he became a bar mitzvah. So we're a three-generation associate. It has a meaning because, first of all, they get information. Second of all, they're contacted. And third, it is just one of the things that the family does. Now, throughout this country, you will find people who were made life members by their mothers or grandmothers who don't do anything with Hadassah. When I said that the person should be canonized who created Hadassah, who created life membership, what I mean is this. If you are a life member, unless you absolutely choose not to let us ever know where you're located, you get Hadassah Magazine 12 times a year. There is this connection, okay? Many women at some point in their lives activate their life membership. And by that I mean they were life members, but they choose to actively join something, you know, to find a group to be. One of the things about being a life member of Hadassah, and people of all ages quickly realize this, whenever you move, you can look in the phone book and find the Hadassah group and call and say, I'm a life member. And you're hopefully immediately, you know, brought into the fold. Now, not everybody operates as well as we'd like them to. But for instance, many, many thousands of women who have moved with or without their husbands to the Southwest, you know, to Arizona, activated their Hadassah membership when they got there. People who went to Florida activated their memberships, and they formed they walked into a room and they were a Hadassah Life member. Now, that didn't mean that the world totally opened up for them, but it is a connection. And many young women who've been made life members in the nursery or for their bat mitzvahs or for their whatevers, at some point in their 20s or 30s, choose to find wherever the Hadassah group is. So that's what I mean, that person should be canonized, whoever created it, because, in fact, when we say we have over 300,000 members, which we do, many of them have absolutely nothing on a regular basis or even on a one-time basis to do anything with Hadassah. You know, but they are still members, and occasionally they will activate themselves. Now, one of the things that people are not aware of, we like to publicize it, but we don't like to publicize it a lot. Hadassah receives more in bequests than any other organization of which I am aware, except possibly at this stage of the game, the federations.
More than the AJC?
You would not even want to guess. What do you think the AJC gets?
Recently, I've been at meetings,
and they get how much?
$1 million and stuff.
From the entire country.
Blasting buildings.
Right, from the entire country. Hadassah gets $30 million a year. Year in and year out, and about half of it. It's been growing. When I first started getting busy in Hadassah, it was like $15 million. It's now over $30 million a year. Over half of it comes from people we have no idea why they're doing it. They've just always known about Hadassah. They wanted to give money to Israel, and they chose Hadassah. They wanted to give money to medicine, and they chose Hadassah. Mm. Half of them, we do know why. They have some connection to Hadassah. But they may have been the totally inactive member, but they chose to leave the money to Hadassah.
Mm.
I'm going to tell you something, particularly since you said you won't repeat it, although it is public knowledge. Wait a second. It's public knowledge. If somebody wanted to look it up in the appropriate place, they could find out. Hadassah's national endowment is over $500 million. Now, people don't know that. What I say is we don't hide it, but we don't publicize it either because we want to continue to get this. And we need it because the interest from it, you know, the income from it, et cetera, helps fund. We don't invade the principal, but the income from it helps fund a lot of the things that we do. Back to the original question, you know, why will Hadassah continue? Hadassah will continue because, you know, we used to have advertisements. We'd say, how do you say medicine in Hebrew? It's H-A-D-A-S-S-A-H, okay? You know, I mean, that kind of thing. And people, in fact, believe it because, in fact, it was true. And it still is true in many respects. It doesn't mean that there aren't other places that aren't, you know, medically wonderful in Israel. But Hadassah, if you ask anybody, if they know anything, they know Hadassah. The other thing that's going to make us relevant, more relevant, continue to keep us relevant, is what I do, okay? And that is, I started to tell you, and, you know, throughout the country, Hadassah has been responsible for really Jewish education of the family for decades, and it goes unnoticed. You know, people don't talk about that, but it's absolutely the truth.
I don't see how.
How what?
How you function in that arena. There are so many other Jewish education processes.
Can't hold a candle.
Tell me something about it. I don't know what you're saying.
Hadassah started as a study group, and there are study groups, thousands of study groups all over this country. Okay? Hadassah created a program called Gal Galim.
Which?
Gal Galim, which means wheels.
Gal
Galim, okay? Al Gal Galim, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a program that was started, I'm going to say 8 years ago, but it could be 10 years ago. It's a program of Jewish education, Jewish family education, we have a very active one here in Pittsburgh. It's now really all over the country. And what it is young families of young children. You can't ever say young families anymore. But families of young children get together and they have trained mentors who run these groups. And they do holiday education and family education and Shabbat education, and it goes on all the time.
I thought synagogues did that.
Well, synagogues may do it, but people don't necessarily go to synagogues, and people don't necessarily join synagogues when their kids are two years old. They tend to join when the kid has to go to Hebrew school, if they join at all, okay? But the family education, and this is going, Howard, the thing is, it goes on all over the country. It doesn't mean that there isn't in one city a synagogue which is the mecca for this kind of thing. But that synagogue has not been cloned all over the country, and Al Gal Galim has. They now have a program for 4 to 7 year olds, and they now have a program called Wheeling On, and they now have an adult program. And these are all going on in various stages, because they're being developed in various stages all around the country. Now, when I say Hadassah has been a major force for Jewish education, if you're out in, I'm not talking Pittsburgh, although it's been a major force of education in Pittsburgh, but Pittsburgh has an ongoing, vibrant Jewish community. this country is loaded with places that don't. Okay, they don't have JEIs, and they don't have all this stuff. But the study groups and the kinds of stuff that come out of Hadassah have kept things going for a very, very long time. Now, the new part that's gone on with Hadassah, Hadassah has actually had an American Affairs program since the early 1940s, but people don't remember that. But they were very interested in the UN, the establishment of the UN, etc. The American Affairs program has been in existence, as I said, since the early 40s. In the 90s, it started to really get, in the middle 80s and the early 90s, it started to really get going. And quite frankly, when I became the American Affairs chair in 1995, we entered a whole new era of what we do with American Affairs.
Why do that when the two AJCs plus, I can name several others that do that?
Well, the reason...
Why fuddle around with that?
Well, we don't fuddle around. We make a meaningful difference, and the defense agencies cover a very, very small cohort of what has to be done in this country. A very small cohort. You happen to be the kind of person who's part of the AJC, who knows that there's an American Jewish Congress, who knows there's an Anti-Defamation League. You would not want to know, once you break out of your circle of friends, how many people don't even know these places exist, okay, and what they do. And what we do is we're not trying to duplicate what AJC or, you know, the Congress, anybody is doing. At the same time, one, we can supplement what they do, and two, we do things that they don't even attempt to do, okay? I'll give you some examples. You can talk about, we are, I'm trying to think of the right adjective or adverb. We're, well, let's just put it in a different way. We are First Amendment absolutists. And
they are too.
They are too, but you have to remember, you're talking about a difference in membership,
yeah.
Difference in where it is impacting, okay? American Jewish Congress is very good on First Amendment stuff. And they're absolutely non-existent on a whole lot of other things. Mm-hmm. The Anti-Defamation League is very good in battling anti-Semitism and other things, but there are lots of other things that they don't really touch on, or they, you know, don't touch in enough places. We have taken on several things, but let me backtrack just a little. You name the Congress, and you name the Anti-Defamation League, etc.
Committee.
I can promise, and the committee. I can promise you. There is no other organization in this country that has the numbers of people that Hadassah has in every single electoral district in the country. Every single congressional district has Hadassah members. Every single, obviously, Senate district because, you know, it's in the states. We have a network that we can call on. That doesn't mean that AIPAC doesn't have a network. It doesn't mean that ADL doesn't have a network or AJC doesn't have a network. They don't have the numbers. They absolutely do not have the numbers. And we've chosen to work on several things. The main thing that I have been working on for the last, now we're in our fifth year of it, is that we have been trying to pass, and we have not passed it yet, and we will not pass it until we get a Democratic Congress, or at least one House that's Democratic. We have been trying to pass a bill to outlaw discrimination in health insurance and in employment based on genetic testing. Now, what that means is that we want anybody in this country, no matter what their religion, no matter what their sex, no matter what their race, to be able to access a genetic test on the advice of their physicians, their health care givers, their rabbis, whoever they go to for advice, to help them get the best possible information on which to make a medical decision without it interfering with either their health insurance or their employment.
Judy, is Hadassah the a wing of the Democratic Party?
No. We are totally nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
I obviously asked the question for a good reason.
Right, no, totally nonpartisan. We are a 501c3 organization. We do not back candidates at all. When I say that until we get a Democratic Congress, we're not going to get this bill passed, it's because the reality is that the current structure of the Congress is such that the insurance companies have much more control over the Republican Party, and they don't want to get this passed. We may get it passed even in a Republican Congress, because this whole idea of medical privacy, et cetera, is all gaining a lot currency, even among Republicans.
Yeah, that was a baiting question.
Oh, I don't care. You can bait me all you want. I personally have conducted many political forums. They are always nonpartisan. Hadassah does not back a cat.
Do the people who you are nonpartisan with feel that Hadassah is nonpartisan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or everyone does it.
We back Republicans. We back Democrats. Excuse me. We showcase Republicans and we showcase Democrats. We don't back anybody as an organization.
Right.
Okay.
You can't, of course.
No, of course not. We're a 501c3.
Yeah,
but don't shake your head at me, Howard. We are nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We support certain pieces of legislation and we look for support everywhere. Okay. The bill that we're trying to pass, the original bill that we're trying to pass, is called the Slaughter Bill. It was introduced by Louise Slaughter, who is a congresswoman from the Buffalo area. She happens to be a microbiologist by training, by education, but she is also a congressperson. And we've been actively backing what was known as the Slaughter Bill, and there are various variations of that in both the Senate and the House at this point. You did not notice, because there's no reason for you to notice, but on page 16 of the President's 18-page State of the Union address, he called for there to be legislation to outlaw discrimination based on genetic testing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he passed a couple of weeks later. He signed, he issued, he promulgated an executive order, which means if you work for the federal government, you're now completely covered. But if you don't work for the federal government, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
So I have testified in front of the Senate committee.
Mm-hmm.
I have held press conferences in Washington on behalf of Hadassah with various congresspeople. We, as an organization, I don't even remember if I've told you this. Did I tell you about when we brought all the rabbis and everybody together with the NIH?
No.
Okay. In 1998, in April, we sponsored, along with the Jewish Council on Public Affairs, which used to be called NACRAC, it's now called the JCPA, and with the American Jewish Congress as a kind of tangential organization, and with the NIH and the Human Genome Project, we sponsored a program in Washington to discuss the whole idea of group stigmatization, particularly the stigmatization of Jews, based on genetics. When a lot of the studies came out, particularly about breast cancer, BRCA1 and BRCA2, the headlines all talked about Jewish women. Now, the reason why the headlines talked about Jewish women is because the test was done on Jewish women. It was discovered at Hadassah Hospital in conjunction with the NIH. In addition, most of the genetic studies done in this country are done on stored blood samples.
Mm-hmm.
Over a million of which were collected over the past few decades based on Tay-Sachs research. They're all Jewish blood. That's what the testing is being done on.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jewish headline comes out before lots of other headlines. But there are other kinds of groups like Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Eskimos, Icelanders, Finns,
mm-hmm.
certain tribes of American Indians have very long-standing, fairly homogeneous genetic pools, and they become a very good research. And we're the biggest because we've done the most testing on us.
Mm-hmm.
So we called a conference, as I said, with the NIH, JCPA participation, our leadership, et cetera, and we brought together the official representatives of about 30 different national organizations, including B'nai B'rith, NADL, NAJC, NAJC, and et cetera. But in addition, we had official representatives from the Orthodox Union,
mm-hmm.
the Conservative Movement,
mm-hmm.
the Reform, and the Reconstructionist. And they came, and I seated them all at the same end of the table. And it's the only time we are aware of that official representatives from all four branches got in the same room together with a bunch of us and discussed anything. And this is what we were discussing, is group stigmatization based on genetic testing. And so we continue to do this. I am flying to North Carolina this weekend. I will be speaking about genetics and genetic testing, and then I go on to Florida the next day to speak about the same thing. I speak around the country a lot on it. We are trying to get this bill passed. We're trying to get the bill passed for all of us, not just for Jews, for everybody.
Sure.
And it's a major, it's yeah. Privacy.
Sure.
And it's, we want people to be able to do what people need to do without being stigmatized. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there any other organization that does anything? Sure. We are the lead organization, Jewish and non-Jewish, in this field. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have been covered in the New York Times and in many other major newspapers around the country for doing this. Okay? This was the ideal American Affairs issue for Hadassah for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't say that I'm the... I did this... We put this on the agenda. Amy Rutkin, who is now a congressman's chief of staff, Jerry Nadler's chief of staff, she left us a year ago. She and I worked together for 4 years. And we chose this issue because the original research was done at Hadassah Hospital. It's an issue important to all of us. It furthers our mission of health and research, mm-hmm. et cetera. Nobody else was doing it. We could take a lead on it, and we could be true to everything that the organization stands for. There are lots of issues out there. We don't necessarily, this was a natural.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next natural one's going to be, although we have a couple of things that we think about. I've been approached when I speak around the country, I've been approached several times by women who have children who have various and sundry mental disorders,
mm-hmm.
who would like us to become active in terms of changing the coverage for mental problems in this country, because the medical coverage is pathetic compared to what the coverage is, insurance coverage, for a physical as opposed to a mental condition. We're trying to fight discrimination in lots of ways. When people gave a blood sample for Tay-Sachs, they theoretically gave informed consent for research. That is, they signed something, okay? The informed consent is almost ridiculous in the sense that they thought they were doing it for Tay-Sachs, which mm-hmm. they were, but it's a blood sample is a blood sample. These blood samples are all stored. They can be used for any kind of research. People did not even think about another physical problem, but they certainly never thought about schizophrenia. Okay? Well, mm-hmm. schizophrenia, they want to use the blood samples for schizophrenia, mm-hmm. et cetera. Do we want to be known as the population that's schizophrenic? Mm-hmm. No. Are we more schizophrenic? Probably not. But the point is, we have the blood samples. So we are going to be the first group that's going to get studied. Okay? So basically, is this still going?
Yeah.
I bet
it's still going.
Okay. I thought we would have finished the tape, the half the tape at least.
Not yet.
Okay. So basically what I'm saying is, when you say, will an organization go out of business, is there new things? We are exploring ways in which to further the mission of Hadassah, for a variety of reasons. One, totally because it's the right thing to do. I mean, what we're doing on this is altruistic to the nth degree. It's also very self-serving to the nth degree because it's an issue which has brought us members, which has brought us interest, which has brought us publicity, which is bringing us a great deal of money because we're doing a lot of gene research in Israel at Hadassah Hospital. Shmuel Pilkas, who is now retired, he's emeritus, but he was the head of the hospital for years. Gave a speech years ago that I heard about the eighth day of creation.
Yeah.
And by that he meant genetics.
Yeah.
And the whole ability to recreate life and to study this and to change things, and that's what we're involved in. So there are other projects that American Affairs does.
Judy,
mm-hmm.
I heard that. But why aren't you and all the other women who go to these meetings playing golf or tennis or... fuddling around, they're busy people. Why should they be involved in affairs that are not so immediate to themselves? Not everybody does that. Why do you guys do it?
Because I am. Yeah. First of all, 300,000 women don't do this. A very small cohort of the membership
right.
does this. Okay.
Yeah.
But that's true of any organization. Why do we do it? Why does anybody do anything that's outside of the,
we're not wearing hair shirts. It isn't that we never do anything to satisfy ourselves, you know, et cetera. But there are a lot of us who, this is what we do. I maintain, and I have a lot of colleagues who are just like me. Actually, in numbers, we're small, but, you know, there are lots of people like me who I believe we are the most privileged people alive. We get to choose what we want to do. And many of us have chosen to do this. It's interesting. I mean, you know, when you ask just parochially somebody like me, what does a political science major do when she grows up? I mean, I didn't just drop into this. I mean, I networked into this the same way you would network for a profession. This is my profession. This is what I do. But there are lots of interesting things. There are people who are fundraisers, and they do it within Hadassah, okay? And most of us who do it within Hadassah also do it someplace else. Now, it is true, and I can say this on the tape. I wouldn't say this from a public platform. There are very few people who do it the way I do, even in Hadassah. And in that respect, it's the joy of living in Pittsburgh. This, I happen to be very intimately involved with our federation, and I get to do lots of things with the federation that have to do with very global things and financial things, et cetera, that if I were in Chicago, they wouldn't even know who I am. But in terms of Hadassah, in terms of men and women who do it in any